This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, friends and other listeners. It's your boy, Michael Cruz-Kane, back with another episode of A Good Cry. My grief thought for the week is this. If you are, like me, someone who is still a little bit anxious about the COVID pandemic, and you're like, I'm pretty sure it's over, but I'm not totally sure, I encourage you to follow your heart there. I'm wearing the mask a lot of the time still. I am social distancing more than most people I know. I am dousing my entire body in Lysol. Whatever you need to do to make yourself feel safe, I would say do it. Look, I hope that the optimists are right and we are on our way out of this thing. But if you're a pessimist, man, embrace that pessimism. Good for you. The numbers are up in parts of the world. We're seeing more of it in the wastewater. I have friends who are catching COVID within the last week, and they're basically fine. They feel like, you know, like they've had a terrible cold, but I don't want to get it. So I'm trying to stay as safe as I was 6 months ago. And if you want to do that, I'd say do it. I'm with you. Take care of yourself physically. Take care of yourself emotionally. Get vaccinated. Get boosted if you're not. I am. This week, we have my friend, the brilliant, talented, funny, thoughtful, beautiful Joel Kim Booster, who, speaking of COVID, lost his dad to COVID. His mother also got it. She recovered, and his father died. You'll hear in this episode that Joel is feeling the loss of his dad pretty powerfully at this point. And I'm sure he will continue to feel some version of that, you know, throughout his life, as all of us do. We get into what it's like to have a lifestyle and beliefs that conflict very strongly with those of your parents, but to still love them and to have them still love you. We talk about psychedelics. We talk about traffic. Joel is a lovely person who's gone through something difficult, like so many of you. And this episode helped me out. I hope it helps you too. This is A Good Cry with Joel Kim Booster. Hi, Joel. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Yeah, today is pretty good. I got in a traffic altercation today, but
no,
you know, other than that, I'm doing fantastically.
What kind of an altercation? When you said like bump, like beeping, or were you out of the car?
I was out of the car.
Whoa.
So this is what happened. But I was trying to help. I was trying to help. There is a very weird light, okay?
Okay.
By my house. And it is one of the ones that, and it sort of is like a curve into the left. And a lot of people do not pull up far enough into the curve to let the light know that there are people there.
Mm.
And it is a frequent problem that people are too far back for the sensor, I guess, to detect that there are cars there. And so you can wait forever.
Yeah.
The light will never change. The light will never change. It is such a weird turn that literally, if it does not think there are cars there, it will not trigger the light. And this happens so much, and people frequently do not get it for a long time. And I was in a hurry because I had to get home and shower before this from the gym. And so I got out of my car and I like gently, not with any aggression, went up to the person who had not pulled far enough ahead. And I was saying to them, and they had their window rolled up, and I was like,
sure.
You need to pull up or the light won't change. You need to pull up or the light won't change. And this person was like, why are you screaming at me? And I was like, I'm not screaming. I'm talking loudly because you didn't roll down your window. And I know this is weird, but I'm trying to help everyone here. Everyone. And so then I just like sort of ran back to my car. And then they ended up blowing the red light.
So they didn't move forward. They just gunned it.
They just gunned it. They were so, I think, ashamed and embarrassed by their own folly that they just gunned it and went through the red light. And then the man behind them pulled far enough ahead. And then we all got to go.
Oh, wow. Did you have a time when you got to look at, like, all the rest of you in line all knew what was happening? Did you have a time when you all got to look at each other and go, we did it?
The thing is I literally got out of my car and ran ahead to the front of the line. So as I was running back to my car, everyone sort of gave me like the nod of like, thank you.
Yeah, the nod.
Because I'm sure, like, the thing is if you don't live by this light and do it every day, I'm sure you probably wouldn't know. But I think that a lot of other people in the line knew. And I was the only one brave enough to say anything.
Wow, okay, there.
To get out of my physical car and run up and scream at this person.
That's a getting out of the car ever is a big move.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And I just, the thing is like normally I'm willing to wait for them to figure it out on their own. But today I had a podcast to get to and I didn't have time.
I can't be late. I have to podcast. I'm sure that there is a grief metaphor in here. So fans, if you want to like retrofit this to a grief thing somehow, we would love it. Okay, well, I'm so glad that you're here. I wanted to ask you the question that we start the podcast off with every time, which is, how would you, Joel, describe your relationship with the grief?
You know, it's interesting. That's an interesting question because it's one that I had to sort of ask myself and have been confronted with over the past year. I don't know that I ever had experienced grief until my dad died. You know, like I never lost anyone close to me before. Grandparents that I wasn't really close to were sort of the closest familial death that I've experienced. And I've never really lost a friend. You know, there was certainly, I think, grief involved in like sort of the tumult of my coming out when I didn't speak to my parents for almost a full year afterwards. But like really losing my dad was like the first time I was ever confronted with grief and confronted with sort of everything that goes along with grief, sort of like regret and even a little bit of, you know, sort of joy and thinking about all the good things that, you know, went on between my dad, despite all the bad things. And and so I my relationship with grief is kind of fresh, I would say.
You mentioned that you felt like you had some version of grief when you came out to your parents.
Yeah.
Had you like reconciled that with them in some way by the time your father died?
No. I mean, we had reconciled in that we had literally reconciled and were on speaking terms. And I think by the time my dad passed we were on pretty much the best terms we'd been on since I was like, you know, in middle school, basically, or before even. It was the most functional our relationship had ever been. But like, I think one of the great regrets of my life is that I was always like, I will address my sexuality with my parents again when I have a reason to. And that reason would be like in taking a guy home that I was dating or something like that. And then that never happened. I never had, only until recently have I been in a relationship. And, you know, that was really a big regret because I never had a conversation with my dad about like how he was feeling about where my life was at and how he would react if I ever did bring somebody home. And I will say it did sort of prompt that conversation with my mom, you know, after my dad died. And it's a very uncomfortable conversation to have with a parent who's super religious. It was like a really good and like helpful conversation to finally have with my mom post my dad dying.
And in some way, your dad has to figure into that conversation, right? Even though he's not physically there.
Absolutely. I mean, he was the catalyst. I mean, the catalyst was twofold. It was my dad dying and then 2 months later meeting my boyfriend calling my mom and being like, hey, I met somebody. And I, you know, it's really early, like, but I think this might be serious. And I just need to know, like, you know, and it was framed a lot in like, how would have dad have reacted? Would he have been okay? Are you okay? Like, where are we at? You know? Because I just never, it's always been such a don't ask, don't tell sort of situation with my parents. I mean, so much about my personal life, just for their sake, we never talked about. You know, they wanted to know like how I was doing, but they were very uncurious about my career, which I was fine with. They were very uncurious about my personal life, which again, I was sort of fine with.
Are those things bound up together? Like a lot of your stand-up is about your identity and your personal life. So I could see if like,
yeah,
you know, they don't want to know really anything about your lifestyle.
No, because they like, I know they won't like it and I know that they won't approve of it. And so why, and I don't need them to. Like I left that behind years ago, decades ago at this point. Like I don't need their approval on certain aspects of my life. And so, you know, it wasn't until my dad died that I felt like the need to say like, cause again, like I had met my boyfriend like 2 weeks before having this conversation. And I was like, I don't want anything to happen. Like, I want to know. I don't want this to be a gray area or an area of my life that like we never talk about. And I don't know, you know, for me, it was like all throughout my 20s, I never had a relationship. Most of my 30s, I didn't want a relationship. And then like my dad died and suddenly I was like, I felt ready, which is, I don't think necessarily had anything to do with my dad dying. I think it was a lot of things coming to a head, like in my life and just being like feeling ready for the first time and then meeting somebody who sort of met the criteria that I was looking for and then calling my mom and being like, hey, how would you react if I brought this guy home eventually? Like, am I allowed to even? How would dad have reacted? And you know, her response was, we're not on the same page about that part of your life. But I would love anybody you brought home as much as I love Dan, who is my brother-in-law that my sister married. And that was really powerful. I mean, it just went on. It went so much better than I ever could have imagined, especially knowing how, you know, they reacted when I first came out. So it's nice. And it's, you know, I actually don't know how much my dad's death informed my mom's response to that either. You know, like I don't know if they would have been as welcoming or accepting before, you know.
Well, I mean, it would have to change your perspective for you, for anyone, on how long life is. That like, oh, I'll get to this.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for your mom or for you, but it certainly seems possible in that context that it could be like, oh, I thought that we could welcome Joel back in just whenever. Like I would always be alive to do that, to meet the person that he loved. And now I'm realizing that that's not necessarily true. And, you know, or the same, the inverse for you, that it's like, you know, maybe I can bring this person back in 30 years, but the idea that, oh, people die changes the calculus on, it changes the timeline for those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And, you know, now my mom, whenever I talk to her, asks how John Michael, my boyfriend, is. And, you know, that is a kind of dimension to our relationship that I never thought was possible when I was growing up. And so, you know, again, like, I don't know how much of my dad's death has to do with that, but it is something positive that has come out of sort of, it certainly sparked that conversation happening.
And there's something to me that is like really beautiful about, I mean, your mom's beliefs, which I think you and I both have many, many disagreements with, but I assume that she holds them earnestly.
Yeah.
And like, I have family like that also, where like, I love them very much, but the way that they think about some things, I mean, almost think of them as like abhorrent. Like I just really profoundly disagree with them. Mm-hmm. But the times where like her love transcends, her love for you transcends that, right? To a degree that like, you know, she has these beliefs, but she's still like, her love for you seems to be like beyond that. It exists above that. I don't know. You talking about that made me emotional and pontificate-y.
No.
How did your dad die?
COVID.
Shit.
Yeah. It's tough too because, you know, my parents, I wouldn't call them anti-vaxxers. And obviously my dad got it, like a couple months before vaccines were available and for him. And, I think they probably would have taken it. I think, like, I actually don't know. My mom got it too and was fine. Gave it to my dad, who I have never, I don't have any conscious memories of him being sick ever in my entire life. Like he was, you know, this like big German farm boy who just like had the constitution of an ox, like was never sick when I was growing up, never took a day off work, never was not working around the house, was in his 70s. And was still had not retired yet and was still doing pretty much all of the work around the house. They taking care of the lawn and like this huge garden that he had and like, you know, just like had not slowed down. And so, you know, my mom, who has 10,000 comorbidities, got COVID and was fine, you know, was sick, was laid out for a while, but like got out the other side of it. And then she gave it to my dad and like, it really did not go that way. And I think the last thing my dad said before, you know, in the ambulance was, we should have done this sooner. And I think like for them, it was like, they're very Trumpy, very conservative people. And I think it was just like at that point, especially by that point, like it was post major lockdowns. I don't think we'd all fully come out of our houses yet, but for the most part, it was after like the major, you know, first year of lockdown. And they just didn't think it was that serious. And so that attitude really carried over into how they dealt with it. And ultimately, you know, that's the hardest part. And I think it's the hardest part for my mom, obviously. And it's the hardest part for our entire family is that like we'll never not wonder now, like what would have happened if he had gone to the hospital a week earlier.
So when he's in the ambulance saying he should have done this sooner, he means going to get treated. Like he was just kind of sitting at home hoping it would go away.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's what they did with my mom was fluids and,
right,
you know, treating the symptoms. There's not a whole lot you can do with COVID ultimately.
Right.
I mean, there are the treatments that, you know, they can try, which they did, all the things, but it was just too late.
And where were you home when all this is happening or?
No, and this is another regret is that like, I just never thought it would get to that place. You know, like they obviously told me when they both got COVID and I was worried. It's so crazy that it was my dad and not my mom. And I know that's awful to say, but when my mom got COVID and she told me that, I was so concerned for my mom because she has so many health problems that I was like, surely like if COVID is going to touch my life in a negative way, like it's going to be with my mom. And so I was like sort of racked with worry and was like getting ready to fly home when my mom was like, no, it's fine. I'm over it. And then my dad had it and I was like, well, that'll be fine. And they didn't really update me. They didn't keep me updated. I think they didn't want me to worry. But yeah, it was tough because they didn't really keep me informed until he was in the hospital. And at that point, I was like a week away from my second dose of Pfizer. And I was like, can I wait to go? Cause I certainly don't want to like get COVID and then give it to somebody else. I wasn't concerned about my health, but I was concerned about obviously like my dad, my mom, like my brothers and my brother and sister and like other people in the family. I didn't want to give it to them. So I waited until I got my second dose. And then by the time I was able to go home, it had progressed pretty far. And I, you know, and that's something that I really regret because by the time I got home, my dad was really unresponsive and I didn't really get a chance. I don't, the last time I talked to him was on the phone in the hospital. And, you know, That's a regret. I should have just gone. I don't know what I was waiting for. I really, really, it was like the height of hubris because I was like sure that he would be fine. I was really, really convinced. I just like never again, like I think it comes from like the worst things that have happened in my life have happened as a result, like, I don't know, just like really deeply like personal stuff related to, you know, my family not accepting me or financial hardship or, you know, like struggle in this industry. Not any, I just had never lost anyone close to me. I never even come close to losing anyone. And so I just didn't know the urgency. I didn't understand the urgency I should have had in going home. And that was really hard. And it is still hard.
Like that sense of regret can like haunts you. It sounds like still, is that accurate?
Yeah. I just, you know, there's so many things that I didn't get to talk to my dad about. And I, you know, there's nothing I can do about it now, but I, you know, I just wish I would have gone home sooner. And I think part of the guilt is that like, it's very difficult for me to be home. It's always very fraught for me to be home because of the friction and I think because of the lack of like my, you know, my parents don't know who I am and that's by design. And I think it's better for both of us in a way because like they certainly don't need to see me talking about fucking getting railed or railing people, you know, or doing lines. Like they don't need to know about that part of my life, which is something that I'm very open about in my stand-up and like, certainly they don't need to watch Fire Island. They don't need to watch my movie where there's like two orgy scenes. Like there's just like, it's better for everybody. And yet like, it's just hard because like there's other things that I could have let them in on. And like now seeing how my mom has reacted to me having a relationship again, like I don't know if this would have been the reaction if my dad were alive or what, but like it really is like a bummer that he'll never get to know my partner and he won't. And I'll never get to know like how he felt about that or how he would feel about that. And Jam is great. My boyfriend's great. And I really wish he had a chance to meet my dad and vice versa. But
I mean, that feeling of regret, I can very much empathize with. I mean, it's like when my son died, there was probably one night that I didn't go to the hospital before he died. And I think about that night all the time. If like I had been there, what if I had been there on that night and I'd met the nurse who was there the night that he died? Could we have, I mean, I don't know how much pain that sense of regret brings you on a daily basis. But for me, over the course of time, that feeling is like more manageable. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because I think almost everyone who has lost like this has some sense of like, oh, you know what I could have done? I could have done this one other thing and now there's not the time for it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It weighs very, when I think of it, it feels like I'm wearing like a weight vest that's like 500 pounds, but I think of it less than I used to.
Yeah. It's hard too, because like, I just don't know. Like, this is so par for the course with my relationship with my family. Like, my brother was home immediately, but my brother doesn't have a job, you know, and my sister lives a mile away from them, so she was there. And they kept telling me, like, if you don't feel comfortable coming home yet, don't come home. It's not a big deal. And part of me is like, that's something that every parent says to their kid, and you should have known better, and you should have just gone, you know? And that sucks. You know, because part of me is like, there's like anger there too, where I'm like, I wish somebody would have just told me, this is not good. You need to come home now. Like, fuck the vaccine. Like, just come.
I mean, that what you're saying makes so much sense. I would say on the other side of it, not to try and change how you feel, but just to give you maybe a different perspective on it. How could you have known that? Like you're saying, like, how could you have known that you could lose someone if it's like,
Michael, it was like going on all over the country. We had been living through a year of death.
That's totally true.
And like for some reason, I just thought, oh, this will not touch me. This will not touch me. This was just a fun snow day for a year where I got to sit inside and get stoned and watch TV, you know, and like the reality of like the horror of COVID and what it was doing to people's lives, not only death, but just like the hardship of not being able to pay your rent, not being able to work, having to be forced yourself to work. Like all of that stuff was just so theoretical to me in a way that like, I'm so lucky. I'm so privileged. I was so insulated from the real actual horror of COVID until this happened.
Yeah. I mean, what I mean is there's nothing else for it to be but theoretical until it's happening. I feel like nobody, COVID specifically felt that way for me also, except that my wife is a nurse. So like she's in the hospital when all this is happening.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it's a movie that's somebody else's life when she's like telling me about the hospital because I can't see it. So it's still, I mean, it makes me anxious because I don't want her to get it, but I don't really, I believe it on only a superficial level. Oh, all these people are dying feels like something that I see on TV, not something that's going to happen in my own life. I guess what I mean is that, and maybe you don't need this, but all that anger and guilt hopefully eventually becomes, and again, you don't maybe need this, but forgiveness of yourself really to be like, I just didn't know. Like, how could I have known, you know, like for deaths that are untimely, there's always like, oh, I could this if I had, but if you had known, you would have gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I had known something that I could have done for my son, I would definitely have done it. So I think there's just a level, I don't know, I feel like I'm trying to bully you into feeling better about it.
Yeah.
I just, I recognize all of the complication of like the many millions of negative emotions that are tied up in reckoning with that loss.
Yeah.
So did your dad have a funeral after he died? Did you guys?
He did. It was a small one, obviously, for obvious reasons. I mean, I'm so glad my brother was there because my sister and my mom definitely wanted to throw like a huge funeral for everyone that he ever knew in the church. And we were like, he just died of COVID. We're not having a super spreader funeral.
Of a contagious disease.
Like, what are you doing? He did have a few, we did have a small funeral for him. And, you know, it was crazy. I kicked a woman out because she wasn't wearing a mask, you know.
When my wife hears this episode, she is going to cheer when you say that. That's like, that is her shit.
It was just so, it felt so crazy to me. I was like, this is not the funeral, lady. Like, the man literally died of COVID. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think right now. Like, just go. Like, it was so crazy. And it really is this like shield. Grief, when you are the son of the person who just died, is like, I felt like I could do whatever the fuck I wanted. Like, I was like, I know it's not my funeral, but in many ways, it feels like my funeral to kick people out. If I want to be crazy, I get to be crazy. And like, I felt insane the whole time. And it also just like, it really distills your like role in the family. Like everybody just reverted back to who they like we were at, like at the age of 12, basically. Like I was just useless. I did nothing helpful. I wrote his obituary, which is like the one skill set I brought to the table that nobody else had. And so I managed to do that, but like I just was I was like home for a month and I just did nothing and I was like useless to everybody around me because all I did was cry and, you know, feel bad. And all I was able to do was write my dad's obituary and pay for a bunch of shit. That's it.
Hey, those are real things.
Yeah.
That's real. Paying for stuff is key.
Yeah.
As a comedian, did you write jokes into your dad's obituary?
I did not. I did not
None.
Write anything. I think maybe I tried. The thing is about my dad is there wasn't a whole lot. There was nothing funny about my dad. My dad would laugh. I remember him laughing certainly, but like he was not a very well humored guy. Like he was very stoic. He's like a first generation German immigrant. So he was just like a very stoic, grew up on a farm, would get like shovels and tools for Christmas to help on the farm. You know, like he was a very unemotional, stoic guy. And I remember he was always very frustrated with me growing up because I'm a very emotional person and would just cry and throw tantrums all the time, well into a time period in my life when it was like not okay and like embarrassing to still be crying over the things that I was crying about. And I think my dad was always like, I mean, this is what makes it difficult. Like I was such a mama's boy and like I was very close to my mom growing up and I was not very close to my dad growing up. And I think I was like, I'm not going to say like a full disappointment to my dad, but like, you know, he's a farmer. He loved tractors, cars, all the guy shit that I like just didn't have it in me to be interested in. I will say like, I'm really glad in some way. It's so weird because like COVID obviously took my dad, but in the year leading up to that, I did so much shit that was like home improvement stuff. Cause like everybody, you know, I was stuck in my house. And so I was like, I'm going to do all this shit. I built a squat rack out of like 2x4s and concrete in my backyard.
Holy shit.
And I don't know, I don't think my dad has ever been prouder of anything I've done. You know, like honestly, I remember sending him videos of like the process of doing that and then the final product. And I just remember like, it feeling like the first time that I could like show my dad something I've done and that he was like legitimately very impressed and like proud of me for doing. And, you know, I would never have done anything like that if I wasn't locked down. You know, I was like putting up shelves and like drilling for the first time. And like my dad was like really happy about that. And like, God knows, like, this is the crazy thing is that like, you know, my dad was the one, my mom, I don't know if my mom has ever seen me perform ever, maybe once or twice in middle school or high school, but my dad was the one who would come to every performance and every basketball game and everything. And my mom, you know, had a lot of like social anxiety that like kept her home. And like, God knows my dad was not a sociable person. He was not a social person. He was painfully shy, but he still showed up to everything. And so it felt nice to like, after years of like embarrassing him on the basketball court and all of these other things that I tried to do, like it was nice to like show him this one thing that I did well. And that was like, finally our interest aligned in something for the first time. And it felt nice.
I mean, that's a beautiful memory to have too. I think I've quoted this on this podcast before, but there's a play called I Never Sang for My Father. I don't know if you would.
Yeah.
I can't think of, you know, are you aware of this play?
Yeah.
And there's a quote at the end of it where he says, death ends a life, but not a relationship, which struggles on in the survivor's mind towards some resolution that it never finds.
That's beautiful.
And I think about that, you know, all the time about like all the things, you know, you had a life with your dad, but it was like, you know, that relationship was cut short and all the things that you could have done. I feel that way about my son too. It's like for him, there's no photo album. There's just like nothing. It's like, here, what are all these things that we would have done? And continuing to have that play in my head, you know, forever. But as I'm like more and more removed from the event itself, the sadness of it feels weirdly like sweet. Like it feels nice to have the memories. I don't know. Does it feel that way for you at all? Like when you think it's very recent, when you think of your dad, is it ever like, does it feel good to like sit on your sofa and cry or whatever?
No. I mean, like it's nice. I like having those last couple of weeks before he got COVID and, you know, during lockdown when I was doing all of these home improvement-y things and like growing a bunch of plants. And like, that was like, you know, huge for my dad. Like I'm glad and I'm like thankful that we had those few months where I was like finally doing things that he could be proud of that I could share with him. But it's still mostly like, it's just shitty. Like I, you know, I'm in the process of buying a house right now. And like every time I talk to my mom about it, she cries because she knows that my dad would be so proud, you know, and like it was always the practical stuff that I think made my dad really happy, because it was like, you know, again, like sort of the only things that I could share with my dad. But like, you know, like big milestones, like when I was able to pay off my student loans, like the financial stuff, like was always like huge for my dad. And like, yes, they are not like necessarily proud of the work that I am doing, like the actual work, because they've never seen it or are not interested in it. And that's fine. But my dad was always very proud that I, of all his kids, had managed to make it out and support myself and like do the thing and like be an adult, you know, like, and be responsible with my money and like all of these things that like, I think like for him, it was like, it never seemed like anything got through to me as a kid, when in fact, like it, a lot of it did. And a lot of what he taught me did. And I think like in the last couple of years before my dad died, like it was like paying dividends, you know, like he was able to see that like all of that hard work, like it did, the important stuff did get through to me. Like, you know, I'm not Christian and I don't vote the same ways that he does. And we don't see eye to eye on that stuff. But like, it was nice that like I was able to give him something, you know, in the end.
Yeah, that's that sense that, I mean, that will remain with you, right? Like those, I would imagine that you would continue to track those things. Like you said, when you're buying a house and your mom is like, your dad would be so proud of this, you will probably continue to have like milestones in your life that you will feel some sense of how your dad would have felt about those things happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, small comforts.
Sure.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Have your feelings about your dad's death and that grief changed? Do you feel that changing you as a person? Like, is it a fact, like an event that occurred in your life? Oh, well, obviously it is, but is it also something that has, you know, changed the way you perceive the world?
I don't know. It's like a bomb went off, you know, and like it's, you're still, even like a year later, I'm still sort of like sorting through the damage. And like, I definitely think that there are, it definitely made me feel like a lot of existential feelings. Like the night my dad died, we had to take him off life support. My mom goes to bed at like 8 p.m. The family is all asleep and I decide to go to Chicago and like see friends and like just get fucked up. Basically, I just wanted to get like as fucked up as possible, basically. And I did a bunch of ketamine, and like, I do not recommend being in a K-hole the day your dad dies, because it is just the most surreal, like dissociative, like experience of like understand, like trying to understand death on a, like the thing is I wish I was a Christian still. Like, it makes it so much easier. It really does. Like watching my mom, like maybe not so much easier, but like the comfort that my mom has in like being like, I know I will see him again. I know. And the certainty that she has is enviable, you know, because I have no fucking idea what's going to happen to me when I die or what happened to my dad when he dies. Like, you know, it's hard to be indoctrinated in a religion for most of your life, you know, half of your life, and then suddenly try and like leave it all behind. Like, there's still like a sense of like, well, certainly there has to be an afterlife, right? Even from where I am sitting now. And like, I just have no idea. And like, it's the not knowing, and it's like it's the uncertainty of like that I think is like hard. And it is like it's something that I just never thought about before. And I think about a lot more in my life now is like that uncertainty of just not knowing. And it's funny. I'm like, I can get emotional just like thinking about like bad things happening now to anybody in my family. And it just feels like it could happen at any time. And I know that's crazy, but that's just like, that's sort of where I'm at now.
I mean, I don't think that's crazy at all. To me, that's a very natural, I mean, I would like to say that I don't have that feeling, but I have it all the time. Like, you know, okay, well, my son died, so why couldn't my other son die? Why couldn't my wife die? The inversion of like before the tragedies, you can't possibly have been the same person. There's no way to retain your feeling about the world once someone close to you. There's no way for me to retain that feeling. Maybe other people can. I don't want to speak for everybody. I'm trying to not universalize my experience.
Yeah.
But that is very relatable to me. I don't think it's crazy to be like, well, this can happen to anyone. Now I am aware of death as a real thing.
Yeah.
And that brings with it so much anxiety. And you know, I try to sort of like weave it into some kind of beautiful macro conception of life, of like, you know, it's all just kind of the circle of whatever. And you were in this form for a while, but you know, you'll become dust and then you'll be a leaf of a tree. But there are also days where I'm like, fuck that, man. I'm so sad and angry about it.
Yeah, I guess like that's the big thing that's changed in my life is that it has really made me like, if I get too fucked up on a certain drug, like the first time I did DMT, which is like, you know, the chemical that is released in your brain when you die, I was like, oh no. I was like, I'm like too close to the afterlife now. Like I'm too, like I can see and I can feel it being close. And like, it has like changed the way I do drugs. Like I am deathly afraid now of doing, like my boyfriend really wants to do ayahuasca with me and I'm like terrified. I was like, I don't need to deal with my dad's death via through the lens of ayahuasca. Or maybe I do.
Yeah, right. Sure.
You know, like people keep telling me that maybe it is like the way to process grief. But it has like, you know, it has changed the way I've used psychedelics and different drugs now.
I mean, I'm not even close to any of that. I smoke weed every once in a while, very rarely. Yeah. So like literally when you're talking about ketamine, I'm like, I know that exists. That's my level of understanding about it. And then DMT, for all I know, is something you made up. I've never heard that. I've never heard of that in my entire life. What is that?
You smoke it and it is the chemical that is released in the moments before you die.
That seems like something you should not smoke.
Yeah.
That seems wrong.
It is like, it's a hallucinogen, but it's like, it's more like, I don't know. It's definitely more powerful than like ketamine, which is also a hallucinogen, or mushrooms or anything like that. But yeah, it can be pretty crazy.
And you did that before your dad died or after?
After, for the first time.
And knowing that that is something that's released in your brain as you are dying or as you're about to die, I mean,
as you're dying and as you're being born and as you're giving birth too. It's like, it's sort of a medical.
Oh, so this is like some cosmic shit.
Yeah, it is like, and it's like kind of a mystery. Like they don't know, they know a lot about it, but they don't know like everything about it, which is what makes it so appealing.
We are so different.
Yeah.
Does your dad factor into your decision to take that? Is it like, is it something like wanting to know what it was like in that moment? Or am I connecting two dots that don't need to be connected?
No, I don't necessarily, it doesn't have anything to do with why I do it, I don't think. It definitely has, it affects the way I experience it sometimes, I think. But it doesn't it's not like a driving factor in why I'm like trying to like experience different states of being because of my dad. But then like sometimes while I am experiencing those different states of being, I do get very close to engaging with like some of those existential questions. And it can either be comforting or sometimes it can like sort of send me in a spiral. But I've sort of run the gamut now, I think, a year in.
Well, talk to me about the gamut. Like, how has the way in which you've felt about grief changed since you found out that your dad was sick through like him dying and now we're looking at in the past?
It's crazy. It's crazy because it is like, I feel all the things and I have felt all the things in the last year, but it's amazing how transactional it has made me look at my life now. Like the last year, I would say like pretty much April on, my dad died a week ago, a year and a week ago today, a year ago, a week ago today. And that makes sense.
I get it. Basically.
Basically, like that following April on, every good thing that it could happen to me has happened to me. And like now a year into that, like I keep looking at my life and being like, oh my God, like all of these great things are happening. When is the other shoe going to drop? And like my boyfriend was the one I think who said to me recently where he was like, the bad thing happened. Like this is not like the other shoe dropped and like this is yeah. the other shoe raising, you know, like you shouldn't, I'm not waiting around, I guess now for the bad thing to happen. Because I know that the bad thing has already happened. But then it just makes me afraid that like, it just makes me look at everything very transactionally, like where I'm like, well, okay, but like I have three good things. And does my dad count? Does my dad count as three good things happen? Does my dad dying count as three good things happening? Or does it only count for two? And then there's still balancing that needs to happen.
Feeling like the universe is going to get you, is going to zero you out. So if like five good things happen.
Yeah. Like what's the exchange rate? What's the karmic exchange rate of like losing my dad versus like having a movie, having a comedy special and falling in love for the first time and buying a house? You know, like does all four of those things equal one dead dad, or does like, yeah. does dead dad only cover like two and a half of those things? And now I need to like get in a horrific car accident and lose an arm to sort of make the balance sheet come out even.
I mean, in my completely unreligious perspective on the universe, my answer to that is the universe does not give a shit. Like it's not like,
yeah.
It's not counting the things and making sure everybody ends up with at zero or, you know, whatever. But that doesn't mean I'm right.
Yeah.
But my logical brain thinks that. But then also, like, there's illogical parts of me that are like, my son is talking to me through this Britney Spears song. So mm-hmm. I'm not, like, the best source of totally rational opinion. Were there any moments since, I guess, like a week ago, a year ago, where the like experiences with grief were like commingled with experiences that were, or feelings that were happy or joyful or funny to you?
Yeah. I mean, like the entire experience, the first like, and it's still happening. I mean, like everything that every new milestone that I reach with my boyfriend, I think about. It's constantly filtered through the lens of like, how would this be different if my dad were alive? You know, I met his parents over Christmas. You know, he didn't come home with me because it was the first Christmas without my dad. And I didn't want to put my mom, that's like a really intense thing to experience. And I didn't want him to meeting my mom under those circumstances, but it did make me think about like, oh, if my dad was alive, would he come home? Like, yeah, probably. And like, would have been really great to like compare and contrast like our parents together and like all of these things. And like, I kept thinking the whole time I was with his parents, who are again, like also pretty conservative people. I was like, oh, they would have loved my dad and my dad would have loved them. And like, what a silver lining to having a gay son is that like you get to meet your gay son's gay boyfriend's Republican parents, you know? And so it's stuff like that.
Are your boyfriend's parents also Republican?
Yeah, but they're like, I don't think they're Trumpy. I think they're more I don't want to speak too much about them because I don't know.
I don't want to
wade into those waters necessarily. But they
smart
are definitely lean more conservative.
Gotcha.
I think fiscally, especially.
Sure.
Than me or my boyfriend.
Cool. The other question I wanted to ask you is, you alluded to this before, but do you think of your dad as being someplace now? Do you like communicate with him or his memory in some way?
Wow. You know, it's funny. I'd thought about like, obviously those existential questions of like, where is he? I don't think I have, I am sort of like one of those woo-woo people who you'd think would experience like, see a butterfly and be like, that's my dad. Or like, see a cardinal because that's my dad's favorite bird and like, be like, that's a message from my dad. I wonder now if I will start to see those things and make those connections because I've had this conversation. But I can't say that like in the last year, I've spontaneously experienced any spiritual interaction with my dad. But I also think that's like so my dad. Like I think if it were my mom, I would be experiencing those things all over the place. But my dad was always like pretty withholding. So it makes sense that he would be pretty withholding in this way too.
But he's like in some afterlife.
Like he ain't sending signs from the afterlife to me. He's like sort of, he's staying out of it.
That he could come back as a cardinal, but he's like, nah, Joel's fine. I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, your mom has that certainty that she's going to be with him, right, in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think of him as someplace? I know we talked about the messages or whatever, but do you like imagine him in heaven or wherever?
I don't know. My like theology is so loosey-goosey and fucked up and all over the place that I think I like instinctually imagine him someplace. Like I think about him being like seeing, it's actually kind of like, it's actually really terrifying to imagine that he can see everything I'm doing now. And so I probably don't actively think about it too much. The one thing that it does do is it brings me a lot of comfort to know that my mom is comforted by it all. It's so interesting how I've like come around to like, I always resented religion and especially their experience of religion. But now I'm so grateful that she has that. That certainty, because I think it does bring her a lot of comfort. And I think it is like some days the only thing that's getting her out of bed and the only thing that's, you know, keeping her alive is like this idea that like she will see him again. So in that way, I'm grateful for the idea of an afterlife, but I can't say that I like consciously think about it too often with regard to my dad.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel very like conflicted about afterlife stuff, especially the more that I do this podcast, the more that like the 70th person who tells you some version of that cardinal is my dad, you start to go, damn, maybe birds are dead people. Shit. Like, which I never would have believed before this, but I mean, truly like a flood of thoughts like that. And you're like, huh, I guess it could be. And then lastly, I guess I just wanted to ask if there's anything else you want to say. I mean, this is the natural conclusion of the podcast, but I also want to make sure any thoughts you have or that you want to share with people who are going through loss that you get to say them.
I can't say that I have a whole lot to say to people who are experiencing loss now, but I guess like it's so cliche and trite, but like, you know, don't wait to say the things you want to say and say them now and say them honestly and you know, because you don't know how much longer you actually have. And, you know, I wish I had said some of the things that I said to my mom and the questions that I have for my mom, I wish I would have asked them of my dad. And, you know, according to my mom, the answers would have been similar. And I will never get that amount of closure from my dad that I've gotten with my mom now. And I regret that. And so I just like, as much as you can, avoid having those regrets.
I love that, Joel. Thank you. This was another episode of A Good Cry. I hope it helps.
It did.
Hi there. Thanks for listening. It's Michael Cruz-Kane again, just reminding you to subscribe to this podcast, rate the podcast, review the podcast, and why don't you even tell your friends about it? Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time on A Good Cry. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.